We need to know. We need them among us. We need to know about their fate, and we need to see a measure of justice. This will tell if the future of Syria will be better than it is past.
I have a final question, Yassine. In one of your posts, you write, quote, "We can't embrace HTS's military effectiveness against the regime while ignoring its ideology." In this last minute we have, if you can explain one of the groups, the leading group that overthrew the Assad regime.
This was written in January 2013, so 11 years ago. And someone digged it out and published it, republished it on X. So, of course, as you see, they are very effective militarily, but they have an ideology. And this is one reason why I am a bit worried, because this is one this tension between the Islamic formation of the new liberators and the general Syrian nationalism is one of my sources of worries. Besides that, Assadism is not yet dead. Assad is gone very cheaply, and he showed how sordid and how trivial he was. But Assadism is still there in the form of sectarianism, corruption, thuggery, security complexes. Still, we don't know the fate about them. And unhealthy, a third reason why I am a bit worried, is a brutally unhealthy regional and international environment. You mentioned that the Israelis seized some Syrian lands, and they bombed in Damascus after Damascus was taken from the regime. This is colonial. I am not surprised by it, but this Israel has been a plague for us for decades and for generations. But this will not go away from the Syrian memory.
Yassine Al-Haj,
if I have time,
we just have 30 okay. seconds.
So the reasons why I am a bit hopeful, I talked about my worries, is that the release of prisoners, the return of displaced people from Turkey, from within the country, the camps are almost empty, and from Turkey and from Lebanon. And I guess many people from Europe are planning to go back. It is a Syrianized thing. It is not like what happened in Iraq 21 years ago. The Syrians did it, and with minimal violations so far. I guess this is a solid basis to build on for a better future.
Yassine Al-Haj Salah, Syrian writer, former political prisoner from 1980 to 1996, author of several books, including The Impossible Revolution, Making Sense of the Syrian Tragedy. He was speaking to us from Paris. This is Democracy Now! When we come back, we turn to the Syrian-American professor Bassem Haddad, head of the Arab Studies Institute at George Mason University. Stay with us. Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. As we continue to look at how the Assad family has lost control of Syria after more than half a century of brutal dictatorship following a rapid advance of rebel fighters. Today, UN Security Council will hold an emergency meeting on Syria. The UN Syrian envoy, Geir Pedersen, said an inclusive transitional government is needed to restore a unified Syria.
All armed actors on the ground maintain good conduct Law and order, protect civilians, and preserve public institutions. Let me urge all Syrians to prioritize dialogue, unity, and respect for international humanitarian law and human rights as they seek to rebuild their society.
Israel responded to the Syrian uprising by invading and seizing parts of Syria's Golan Heights in violation of a 1974 agreement with the Syrian government. Israel also bombed a number of areas, including a Syrian airbase and weapons depots. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said Sunday the collapse of Bashar al-Assad's regime in Syria was a direct result of Israel's military campaign against Hezbollah in Lebanon.
This is a historic day in the history of the Middle East. Assad's regime is a central link in Iran's axis of evil. This regime has fallen. This is a direct result of the blows we inflicted on Iran and Hezbollah, the main supporters of Assad's regime. This created a chain reaction throughout the Middle East.
Meanwhile, the United States carried out dozens of airstrikes inside Syria, targeting areas held by the Islamic State. And in northern Syria, Turkish-backed armed groups have seized the city of Manbij, which had been controlled by U.S.-backed Syrian Kurdish forces. For more, we go to Philadelphia, where we're joined by Bassem Haddad, associate professor at George Mason University, author of Business Networks in Syria, The Political Economy of Authoritarianism. Resilience. He's the co-founder and editor of the Jedalia e-zine and is executive director of the Arab Studies Institute at George Mason University. His forthcoming book, Roots, Dynamics, and Transformation of the Syrian Uprising. Professor Haddad, first, your response to what took place this weekend.
Thank you, Amy. It's good to be with you again. The first thing I'd like to say is that there are so many more questions than answers, so it's important, especially today, so it's important to keep that in mind as we go along. I would like to be analytical, but there is no way to avoid the importance and the value of watching what happened and what it means, the collapse of the regime after 54 years or 71, if you want to consider the Ba'athist rule, what it means to ordinary Syrians who have actually been living under this regime for so many decades. It is a moment that, if you look at all the news, that cannot be overlooked and cannot be trumped by analysis of the bigger picture at this very moment, although the bigger picture is grim, it's very problematic, and it's really important for us to get to it, and I hope we can get to it today. But it is not something that we could underestimate, given the brutality of the regime, not least its lack of ability completely to govern in the past several years, at least after 2019, 2020, and its inability to provide the infrastructure, social services, and the basic needs for its people, which actually did play a role in the very rapid march of Hayat Tahrir al-Sham into all of the major cities of Syria.
Explain HTS, its history, and Jilani, its leader, and what you're most concerned about right now.
Well, you know, Hayat Tahrir al-Sham is a coalition of a lot of groups, primarily Jabhat al-Nusra, which everyone loves to say it's al-Qaeda affiliated, although there's been some sort of break. Nonetheless, it is what it is. As Yasin al-Hajj Saleh said, he is worried about the ideology of HTS and some of the potential consequences. And if Yasin al-Hajj Saleh is worried about HTS, where Yasin al-Hajj Saleh called Hezbollah thugs, you can imagine what or how worried everyone else is about the future. But we will get to that. HDS has actually acted in a manner that is not alone. HDS cannot move out of Idlib and could not have moved out of Idlib without Turkish approval. And even the Turkish government cannot make this decision alone. So the question is, who did Turkey connect with, coordinate with, to produce this issue, or this campaign, or this operation? The second question is, were there any connections between the ceasefire in Lebanon and what Turkey did today or 10 days ago or right before the coordination took place or around then, and what kind of also coordination took place between Turkey and Russia, as well as between Russia and the potential group HTS and otherwise, because they apparently, from recent reports, they have actually allowed the Russians to keep their air base. This has to be checked. So there are a lot of questions, and I wanted to insist again that at this point, although we can keep going and talk about the regional and global implications, which are not good, but I would like to insist on seizing this moment to recognize what it means for millions of Syrians who are actually very happy that this has happened. Many others are concerned, including those who are actually celebrating. They are concerned about the future. They're concerned about how this took place, where this is going to go, who's going to be in the lead. And many are concerned about what this means to the expanding global superpower, imperialist, American-Israeli hegemony, domination in the region in the absence or far weakened what we call the axis of resistance. This is not a small issue, and it will become part of the major headlines very, very soon.
Talk more about this. What would the amount of Syrian participation in reshaping Syria, will that be challenged because of the international support Syria will need to rebuild that will include the U.S., players like the Gulf Arab monarchies? Turkey will also be, as you pointed out, and already is deeply involved. Will that push what happens to Syria in a certain direction?
Again, I must reiterate the importance of having so many questions with very, very few answers, because we do not know exactly how this was coordinated and with whom and what are the trade-offs that have actually already been in place. But it's going to be a phase, the next phase, or this current phase, is actually not the phase that we can focus on, because according to the best analysis, the current configuration is not going to be transferred into the next phase. The political and economic and the military configuration today, the people that actually have the guns and are in control are not likely themselves alone, maybe part of a coalition, a bigger coalition, a more diverse coalition, but not alone, move forward. There's so much trepidation in Syria. There's so much trepidation in Turkey, by the United States, by many of the Arab states that are powerful and will probably be somewhat relied on to help rebuild Syria, about the singularity of a particular group, the HTS, and how it need not and should not be the only player in the field. But the questions right now are just that. It's very difficult to recognize where things are going, but we do know that the United States and Israel are extremely comforted. Israel yesterday on Channel 13 called what happened an accomplishment. And this accomplishment is something that will allow Israel to move forward with this genocide in Gaza, along with the United States. The United States is not just complicit, it's a full partner in this genocide. And much bigger issues will come to fore in the coming weeks. And the jubilation, while is important today for the people who have been under the boot of the regime, and we cannot underestimate this no matter how concerned you are about imperialism and global political economy and so on, this has to be recognized, because one of the things that will actually cause me trouble and will cause my phone to blow up in just a few minutes by my own friends is that a lot of people who overemphasize the question of imperialism on a day like this or on a week like this, unfortunately, unwittingly, make the Syrian people invisible, as if they are not important and only global power politics is. And that is something that I would like to caution against, despite the fact that, yes, we can analyze that what has just happened is a triumph for global power, like the United States, for imperial designs, for conservative Arab states in the region, for normalizers in the region, and certainly for Israel and any or anyone who would like to weaken any sort of resistance, forget even Iran and Hezbollah, in the region to these kinds of plans that are not just about land theft and political domination, but also about economic plans and prescriptions that will disempower the working classes in the region and continue to do so.
Can you talk more about HTS and whether you believe it will be one of the leading partners in a new Syria? Its background, its running of Idlib, how Idlib, that whole area, was run?
I mean, honestly, HTS, first of all, wasn't in complete control of Idlib. It was the dominant power in Idlib. There are various groups in Idlib that were actually also somewhat powerful. HTS has been able to govern for the most part. It is not likely that HTS will ever singularly rule Syria. This is something on which there is regional and international consensus, if not even domestic consensus. Despite everything that we have seen, Syrian society is among the most secular of Arab societies, and even if affinity with conservatism and Islam has grown considerably in the past few years or a decade or even more, there is no appetite for what HTS has been advocating for, including its recent, as in the past several years or in 2014, 15, 16, a sort of discourse that is exclusionary. Now it says it's repudiating this discourse. Now it's actually trying to make sure that its forces do not repress, although what we have seen in many parts of Syria are various forms of exclusion, destruction of alcohol stores, burning of Christmas trees, and things of the sort that supposedly HTS has repudiated and tried to correct the path. This new vision or approach of HTS is interesting. It's probably also coordinated with those who gave it the carte blanche to move forward. In all cases, the HTS is not the kind of apple pie that, well, in Syria it won't be apple pie, it'll be knafe, that Syrians are looking for. And in the very, very near future, as the new government is established, as the new military formula is formed and reformed, we will discover that there will be attempts to broaden the coalition and potentially also avoid the horrible mistake that the United States did after its fraudulent and brutal invasion of Iraq in 2003, which is to completely dismantle the state, the ruling party, the army, and so on, because that had created the kind of chaos that actually ended up being counterproductive for the invading power and beyond. So I think it'll be a different path than we have seen in Iraq. It will also be a more difficult path because Syria does not possess the kind of resources like Iraq's oil, at least, or part of it, because it's not all within the control of the government right now. So Syria will have an even more challenging future economically, socioeconomically, and politically. And what I fear is that within a short period, Syria will be off the news, and we will see what I was talking about earlier, the analytical framework of what that means to the region, quite soon, actually, as developments take place.
Well, Bassem Haddad, we want to thank you for being with us. Of course, we're going to continue to follow this. Founding Director of the Middle East and Islamic Studies Program at Mason, George Mason University. We will link to your work at democracynow.org. When we come back, we go to London to speak with the Syrian filmmaker Waad Al-Khatib, director of the acclaimed documentary For Sama, for which she filmed hundreds of hours of footage in her native Aleppo to show life during the Aleppo uprising. Stay with us. I al-Jundi. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman as we continue to look at the fall of the Assad regime with activist and award-winning filmmaker Wa'ad al-Khatib. She was forcibly displaced from her hometown of Aleppo with her family in 2016. Her Oscar-nominated film Farsama, released in 2019, offered a rare glimpse into Syria's civil war. The devastating account was filmed over the course of 5 years, starting in 2011 during the uprising in Aleppo. Amidst airstrikes and attacks on hospitals, Wa'ad falls in love with one of the last remaining doctors in Aleppo, gets married, has a baby girl, Sama, to whom the film is dedicated. When protests against the regime of President Bashar al-Assad first began in 2011, she was a young economics student who began filming on a cell phone. This is a clip from For Sama.
Sama.
Things have got so bad now. Your dad can't leave the hospital. So we live here now. This is our room. Behind those pictures are sandbags to protect from shelling. Yes, I'm coming. We do our best to make it feel like home.
The sound of a bomb. We now go to London, where we're joined by Wa'ad al-Khatib, Syrian filmmaker, activist, co-founder of Action for Sama. Your thoughts today as we listen to the bomb exploding as you're with your baby. Tell us where that was in Aleppo and what your hopes are for the future, Wa'ad.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. It just really... I don't have maybe the right words really to explain. I'll do my best, sorry. But like for years, for these last 13 years, I don't think any Syrian have seen the light at the end of the tunnel. There was something, it was keeping us moving forward, keeping us fighting, and we just like didn't want to lose. And, you know, today what happened and this feeling today is just something over the moon in 1 second. Happy, dancing, laughing, and then so much crying and pain and grief and mourning, I think. It's just, I'm so happy and grateful for where we are today.
And can you talk about what hope you have for the future, how you see a new Syria emerging, and who will be the players, and how people like you, an activist deeply involved with Syria, though you left forced out of Aleppo, what, like 8 years ago, what your plans are? Will you return?
Yeah, I mean, since the Syrian revolution started in 2011, that was the time when I and so many other Syrians have felt that we belong to this country, we can fight for this country, we can own our country. And, you know, today we do have the same feeling exactly as 2011. This conversation about what's going to happen next, who's going to rule, how the government would look like, all of this conversation, we were thinking about that like 11 and like 13 years ago as well. The last 5, 6, 7 years, I think it was just so much of no end, no hope, no justice. And, you know, today when we are looking at all of this, yes, there is concern. Yes, there is so much things to worry about. And there's a huge work to be done. There's a long path forward. But we can't, like, forget or not acknowledge and not feel. And that this is now a moment, a remarkable moment in our history, in our life in Syria. Whatever is coming next, I don't believe at all that would be worse than what we've been through, what we lived through. This first 13 years of being sieged in our own cities, being bombed, being attacked, hospitals, schools, prisoners, people who are detained. whatever this future would hold, you know, if we manage to go through this, if we are now on the other side, and we are, I don't believe that whatever happened will be worse than what we've been through already.
Are you concerned now about the possibilities, for example, HTS, the leading the way for the overthrow of Assad, the leader of HTS, Gilani, what he represents? How will everyday Syrians or Syrian civil society control the future?
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely concern, but they are coming on a long list of concern. For me, this is one thing which is definitely important and fair. But again, there's much more things to be looking at, especially today, which I think you mentioned that in the earlier on when Israel, you know, at Al-Jolan area and the bombing of some areas and stuff in Syria, the Turkish involvement, the U.S. involvement, like there's so many players who are working on Syria. HTS definitely one of these players. And it is like what we see on the ground. And this is, I think, it's something even for us, we're still trying to process and understand. For years, you know, these statements, even when it's like much less different from how HTS think, it used to be only statements. It was not matching what was going on the ground. Today, what we've seen in the last like 11, 12 days, it was just something so much different in everything, not just the statements and how this group and other groups who are leading this battle today thinking, but also on the ground. We all have connection there, and we've heard from so many people. We're looking at all the footage that's coming out. We did already set up like groups where we are organizing what's going on in the new liberated cities. And what we are hearing from people on the ground are very much similar to what we have seen in the statements.
Finally, let me ask you, the voices of Syrian women are so often underrepresented. Your journey from student activist to award-winning filmmaker has been extraordinary. How do you see your role fitting into the future as a storyteller and an advocate? We have 30 seconds.
Yeah, I think we've seen this dream of free Syria 13 years ago, and we thought that some point this will never be happening. Today it is happening. It's real. We have so much work to be done. We have so much lobbying within our community. You know, like the Syrian people were divided by the Syrian regime for years, and now it's the time to live together, to move forward, to think together, to see this future that's coming together. And this is now the reality of this situation. So yes, so much hope, so much amazing feeling, and our hearts still with everyone who's still waiting for their beloved ones who they were disappeared in Assad prisons for so many years.
And how old is your daughter today?
My daughter now is 9 and my second daughter is 7.
Well, Al-Khatib, I thank you so much for being with us. Award-winning Syrian filmmaker, her film For Sama. This is Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman.
Hi, this is Jesse Brown, the host of CanadaLand, Canada's only media criticism program. Every week I talk to some of the most interesting people in the country about some of the things that matter most. We talk about the news media, about comedy, film, music, and politics. And you can now listen on CJSF 90.1 FM every Monday at 5 p.m. Wait for it.
We need to talk.